Well, I was hoping, since there's gonna be daylight saving time and everybody's gonna have to, you know, spring forward, and nobody would show up, and I'd be here, and I could, you know, be comfortable and just go ahead and do my own little sermon, and my wife would, you know, probably snooze on me, so it'd be great. So, oddly enough, we're talking about change today. Obviously, I'm wearing a suit. That's just a lot of the change, just a little tied around the neck. I feel like a, you know, like the ZZ Top song, you know, sharp dressed man. But my wife is making me do it. So that's a change in itself. You know, getting married, boy, you won't change. There you go. She likes to go to bed early. I like to stay up till like 3 o'clock. You know, she likes to wake up early. I like to sleep in. She likes to go to work. I'd rather not find a job. You know, this is all these different things that we have. That's just different. Change. It's always been a big topic for me. I've always enjoyed change in the idea of it, not actually doing the change sometimes. Because change can be hard. And one of the greatest things is I got to take part in was I went to Harding University's master program, which is called MFT, which was Marriage and Family Therapy. And I didn't get to finish it all, so don't, you know, hold me to it. Don't come ask me questions because I can't give you therapy, but I can definitely give you some good advice about going and seeing somebody else. The change was always a big topic. I remember our professors, they were always saying, you know, change is very hard for people. They don't want to do it. They think they want to do it, but they don't. And he would always say something like the idea of, you know, you need to encourage them because, first of all, they're coming here to share your problems with you. They're here to, you know, that takes a lot of courage to just show up and just be like, hey, let me tell you about this issue I have. And he said sometimes they really don't tell you until like the fourth or fifth session because they want to get to know you. Well, I think if I was to continue in the program and I was to go and do a session, they'll be like, okay, well, this guy's cool. We'll go ahead and just tell him everything and, you know, break down that first session. Then I'll be a miracle worker, and then I'll feel more like Jesus every day. But anyway, so change is definitely not an easy process. I'm sure, I know the Andersons, they told me that they their anniversary is today or around this time. Today. Yeah, oh, it's today. Well, see, obviously he's got to change. She's not here, so... He's already started. He's up a lesson on tongues right now. All right. But congratulations. You know, I wanted to bring that up. Try to remember that. But change in itself is not an easy process. It never has been. It's always been really rough. The issue with change is we used not to have to do that. Back when the world was right and God said it was good, there was no need for change. So everything was there. Now that sin's entered the world, we have this huge problem, and that makes us to have to change. So, we always talked about in school that if you want to change, you would first of all have to see a contrast. I mean, if you don't know that something's wrong, then you have no idea that it's wrong in the first place. Like this morning, I was putting on my tie, and I realized that, you know, I've never been a great judge on how to, if you're supposed to balance it, the tips of them together before you start tying it, they're supposed to be hanging out here, or you're supposed to have it a little longer, a little shorter. Boy, today, I started the first time, and it was like, I had the itty-bitty bow tie looking thing. I was like, well, I haven't done this in a while, I'll try it again. Well, then it got really too long, so I just decided to leave it because I'd rather have it long than short. So if you see it hanging down over here, on the leg, that's probably what it is, okay? So, anyway, so contrast, it's important. We always talk about how it'd be like two sides of a coin. You know, you got the, if you look at George Washington, the quarter, 25 cents, you got George on one side, and you got an eagle on the other. They're obviously same value, but it's just a different view. It's a different viewpoint. Like I said, I like to stay up late. My wife does not. She much rather go to sleep. And I much rather stay awake and play games for hours and hours and then realize that, oh boy, you know, spring forward, that's going to make me lose an hour. That's not fun. I always like to gain more hours. If we could just continue to fall back and keep gaining hours, that would be the greatest thing ever. So, anyway, so contrast is very important. We need to see that. We need to be able to understand that there is a need for change. Otherwise, we could just go on with our married lives and just think nothing about it. And then after we get that, we need to find a solution to help us follow through, because it's not easy. You know, I've been trying for, I don't know, probably since college to lose weight. And in reverse, somehow I've gained weight a little bit. I don't know how that happens. You know, you go on these diets and you're like, all right, well, I think I'll choose this one. But I think I chose the wrong one. I think it was called the seafood diet. And I think the idea is you see the food and you eat it. And I don't know. I thought I was going to lose weight that way, but I guess not. So we need obviously a good solution to follow, not just one that, you know, you want to do. Then we need to comprehend the importance of our newly found change, because it is important to realize the whole reason for change and the value that you get for it. Some of the resources for change, because one of the great things that God's told us is in 2 Peter 1, verse 3, it says His divine power has given us everything. That's kind of the shorthand version. He's given us everything. I mean, everything that we need for life, everything that we need just to be here. So, obviously, if we need the change, and yet we can't find it, because that was always a big issue. I wouldn't have any desire to be an MFT counselor if change wasn't easy. I mean, if change was easy, then everybody would, you know, be able to fix their own problems. Life would be great. The issue is people get stuck in ruts. They don't realize what kind of change they need. They don't even realize how close they are to it. Every time, as long as you keep trying, you know, you go and want to change one thing, and as you're going through, you realize, well, you know, that's not as easy as I thought. Maybe I should try something else. You try something else, and then that's it. That's the only two things you try, and you never met your goal. There are possibly endless ideas of how to do it. I mean, like I made mentioned earlier about diets. There's so many diets on TV. There's the hydroxy cut. There's the Weight Watchers. There's the what's that guy, Atkins? You know, and then you have the exercise machines. I don't know what those are about, but all these different kinds that you can do, and so it's really endless. And it's just like God said. You know, His divine power has given us everything, and our resources is awesome, because He gives it everything. I mean, and then just for an example, in John chapter 8, verses 1 through 11, it's talking about the woman that was caught in adultery. And, you know, and they were trying to get Him to pretty much, you know, get stuck where they gave the right to stone. And that was part of the law back then, is that if you were caught in adultery, that you were supposed to be stoned. Now, I don't know where the guy was. I always thought that was a little odd that they only brought her and not the guy, because I would think that should be one and the same. You know, it takes two to tango in that form. So, but, you know, as he's sitting there, he pauses. And what does he do? He gets down on the ground and starts writing in the sand. To me, that's a resource. He's doing something totally different. He's taking their minds off of her. You know, she's the one that's got all this attention, or feels like probably like millions of eyes are on her, and knowing that they all want to stone her. And yet, he goes and bends down where they all, you know, have to see what he's doing. I mean, I know I'd be curious. And so he's over here drawing in the sand. And, you know, I'd love to know what he put it down on there. It's probably Hebrew, so I can probably read it anyway. But it'd be great to know. But the thing is that he took all that attention off of her and put it on himself. He was using himself also as a resource to help her. Now, because that she was going into adultery, we can see that, you know, because he took himself and put himself out there, he was able to change the whole situation and put it back on them. It's the coin idea. You know, they see it as, okay, this is what the law tells us. This is what we're supposed to do. You know, she's supposed to die. Well, he swapped the coin. He said, wait a minute. He says, let the first person throw a stone who is without sin. Well, obviously, nobody could do that. You know, it's that other side. It's the brilliant and the best piece. It's the side that I like to say is the head side. Because, you know, when you find a penny on the ground, if it's on tails, you're not supposed to pick it up, because that's bad luck. Not that I believe in superstitious things, because I know that my grandmother is a saint. Everywhere we've gone, that I go with her, like, we go over to a gas station. She'll find a penny. She will pick that up and take it inside and say, somebody has lost this. I'm like, Grandma, don't you understand that they could pay for my college education as much as you picked up? So, I mean, that kind of whole idea, you know, she didn't care. She was always going for it anyway. But the head side is supposed to be the good side. So I'm going to associate that with God's side. It's the good side. It's the what we need side. And so he changed it. He said, you know, y'all are just going for the bad and the evil. Really, we need the good side. And he came in and stepped through and was able to save her life. And he said, if nobody else condemns you, go ahead. Just don't go. I mean, just don't sin anymore. You know, I mean, this is a second chance. That's a change of her life and for the better. And you know, something that dramatic, I'm sure, she went on as a changed person from that point. Then we can look at Luke 17, 11 through 17. It's talking about the 10 lepers, and they had leprosy, and only one ended up coming back and thanking God. And it was a Samaritan. You know, everybody always downed the Samaritans back then, that they weren't quite Jews, and they weren't quite Gentiles, and nobody liked them. They were always the outcasts. And yet, they were the ones that had, you know, probably the most to be thankful for anybody who did something like that. And they showed it. It's interesting to me that he goes and tells them to go to the river and go dip in it, I think, 7 times. Yeah. And then, so it's quite interesting. He used a resource. We all know that they could have been healed right then and there. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, Jesus has done it many times before, and we can look through all the Bible for examples of that and just notice that he just can heal him with a snap or a thought of his mind. But yet he told him to go use this resource, this water, to go heal themselves. And and he said, went to the one that came back, he said, go ahead, your faith has made you well. You know, it's really interesting sometimes that we don't realize what kind of resources we have around us. This building is a blessing. You know, if we ended up having to expand over to this side, we have that option, you know, because that's an awesome resource to have. A great problem right now is that we can feel that, you know, and as a problem, that's just, beautiful. One of my professors, he was always the weird one. He would always say that confusion is a conduit, and I still to this day have struggles believing that, but he would always say, if you're confused, then you're going to make a change. He was like, if you realize there's something wrong and you're confused about it and you don't know what's going on, you're going to search it out. You're going to figure out what you should do, and that comes the change. So he was always bugging me about that because I don't know what he was trying to tell me. But anyway, moving on. Then we have to realize the next part is we need to be striving, because it's not easy to change. You need to be on like a kick butt change program, because it's not going to be something you need to take lightly. Because if you're really wanting to change, you're really going to do it. If you're not, then you really don't want the change in the first place. You might think you want the change, like me. I think that I want to be skinnier, but you know what? Honestly, I'm very comfortable. And that might not be good because I'm not as healthy as I could be, but I'm comfortable. I enjoy being like I am. I like to be the teddy bear that most girls like to call me. My wife doesn't like that as much as she used to, but, but you got to strive, and it has to be in belief, because you have to believe in yourself, and it's hard to empower yourself. If it was easy to empower yourself, then everybody would do it, and everybody would be, brilliantly doing everything they ever set out for. The hard part is going through it. I mean, I can talk about it all day about how I'm going to lose weight, but it takes a lot more to actually do it, So you gotta be able to strive, and I mean, I'm talking about just, like athletic kind of strive. You don't go and say, I'm going to run a 5K marathon, and then the day before start practicing. Maybe you make it like 30 feet like I did if I was going out to do that. So you have to train. You have to be prepared. You have to be, you have to have a goal to make and finish and really want that and desire. Just for instance, in Revelations 2, chapter 2, verse 21, there was a lady there that was unwilling to change. And because of her unwillingness to change, it caused pain for her. I mean, I mean, she was not able to do anything that she was wanting to do because she was unwilling to do it. She wanted it, but was unwilling. And you just, that goes nowhere. In Matthew 18, verse 3, he's talking about, you know, he gets the child and he's like, you know, you must be like, become like a child. You must change to be like this child to enter the kingdom of heaven. You know, there's an attitude change there. We need to become more childlike in mind as far as to enter the kingdom of heaven. And then it talks about just a little farther on in verse 22. It's talking about the rich young ruler. And we get examples from that just by seeing that he did everything right except he was holding on to money. He was hanging on to something that held him against God. There was that dividing. You know, Jesus came to fill that divide. And, you know, if we go and follow Jesus, then obviously we can find the Father. But if we hold something between us and Jesus, then we're not going to make it. We're not going to... We need to realize that what's more important. And then just a little bit further, we can also see in another example. That's why I love the Bible. It just goes and hits it right after another one. And in verse 35, it's talking about the blind beggar. And he's trying to get up to Jesus. And the crowds are just telling him to be quiet, leave him alone. You know, he doesn't want to talk to you. You know, just stop. And Jesus, you know, I mean, the blind beggar was very persistent in doing it. He just kept going. He didn't care who told him to push. And Jesus listened. He told the crowds to be quiet. And he wanted to talk to him. And because of that, he was made well. You know, because he was persistent. If he would have gave up and been like, well, you know, they're probably right. He probably doesn't want to talk to me. You know, then where would he be? He would still be probably a blind beggar. But because he was persistent and continued to push and strive, he got Jesus' attention. And that's what we need. Also, in 21:12, it says, if you believe, you will receive whatever you ask for in prayer. You know, it's very true. If you believe, God's going to help you. Then he's going to help you. He tells us right there. And really, in all these stories, common words that Jesus said is your faith has healed you. Go and be well, you know, and live faithful to me. And, you know, it's always, your faith has healed you. Well, faith is believing without seeing. So they were believing before they knew that the result was even going to happen. That's striving in another sense. Because, honestly, I don't know how you can define either one. But striving is something you're going for. And that you're not sure if it's going to make or not, but you believe it's going to if you continue. So faith is just like that for me, because I believe that I'm going to go to heaven if I keep doing everything I can. Not that myself can get my in, but I'm going to do everything I believe I can for the Lord. By the grace and mercy of Him, I'm going to, you know, be there with Him so I can see His face. And because I want to. I want to do things for Him. And I'm going to strive to make that obvious so he will stop and listen and see that I'm one of his children. Also, in Mark 9, 17 through 29, it's talking about the demon-possessed boy. And the disciples have already tried to take care of this demon, but they were unable to. And so they bring him back, and he says, everything is possible for those that believe. And he said, you know, do you believe to the father of this child? And he goes, I do believe, but help me overcome my unbelief. Sometimes we do struggle, and we need somebody else. You know, that's why you have accountability partners. That's why you have workout groups. That's why you have running buddies, you know, because it's a lot easier to do it when you're not the only one. So, you know, we can ask God for that help. I mean, he tells us, you know, that he's going to be there for us. He says, if you pray for it and believe it, then it's going to happen. So if we need the help, that's what we need to do is pray and be persistent in praying about it. Because if I was to say I wanted, you know, maybe a four-wheeler, even though I have one right now, but if I was wanting another one, that it's not my dad, he doesn't use it for all the time hunting, I would be persistent in trying to get it. I would make things so it would end up being that I got a four-wheeler. I would be wanting that goal of finding one. I would, you know, probably work a little bit more odd jobs just to get some extra cash flow. I'd probably, you know, look at more of what is available. I'd probably go a lot on Craigslist just to see if anybody has one on sale really cheap. You know, I'd do extra things that normally I wouldn't do if I didn't really care to have one. If I, you know, if I just said it and that was it, well, am I going to get one? Not unless somebody really wanted to get me one. You know, it's like, oh, I went forward. Like, oh, today's your lucky day. All right. Because that would be great. And if anybody wants to do that, all means go ahead. But, you know, we got to make sure that we truly do say what we want and need in some cases. But the problem is sin. Sin came in this world and has taken away that ability. I mean, it's change now. We used to be perfect in every way, and then sin entered and separated us from God, and now we need to change. And, you know, I know on many Bible tests, you know, they're always like, put down Jesus. It'll always be the answer. Well, in this case, it is. You know, that's one of the things that you would have got 100 on if that was a question. And we can see it that in Romans chapter 7, it's one of the coolest passages that I personally like. It's Paul talking about how he does the things I want to do, I don't do. And the things that I want to do, I mean, the things I don't want to do, I do. So he's got this huge conflict of interest. He's trying to strive to do what he wants, that he knows he should do, but ends up doing something totally different. But yet, it's always a persistent trying. And then you can see a little bit ahead of time the answer, because he kind of throws them in reverse. He gives you the answer and then the problem that he always has. And it's in 4 and through 6. And he's basically saying that, you know, he died to go through the law in the body of Christ, and that it released us from that law, and now we serve in a new way of the Spirit. Now that's interesting that there's a new way in the Spirit, because the Spirit's been around since the beginning of time, and there's a new way, which means it's just new to us. It's something that we've not really been able to tap into. But obviously when he ascended, he said, I'm going to leave you a comforter. I'm going to leave you somebody that's going to translate, you know, your prayers to God, you know, what you really need and everything else. And honestly, I'm very thankful for that, because sometimes I say, like we talked about today, Rich was telling us that he wouldn't just give his kids exactly what they wanted. In fact, he said, most of the time when they said, I want that, he's like, or I need that, he's like, no, let me correct that. You want that. He said, really what you need is, well, Jim probably knows the best, you know, a house and food and everything else is, it's just a want. It's not really a need. So there are some things that we want, but really the things that we need, God said he'll take care of. And if you believe that and persistent about it, then obviously it's going to happen. But that's through Jesus. Because Jesus was able to bridge that divide. He was able to take change. You know, we were the ones who screwed it up and made sin happen. And then Jesus was able to change it. And that's one of the cool things about change, is that when clients would come, and I got to see this as being in first year, we'd had to watch second year tapes, the ones that were actually doing the therapy. They didn't just throw the new guys in and was like, all right, here, you solve lives, you know, and problems and whatever. They actually made us watch second years that had a little bit more experience behind their belt, as they were also supervised, of course. But we could see that they needed an intervention. They needed somebody else to help them change. And that's what Jesus did. We would be stuck in this cycle of sin without any end. They did have sacrifices, but that only pushed it off. You know, they just rolled it over, so to say. But Jesus was able to come in from an outside source and to break that cycle and make it different, make a change for us. So, what does that solution look like? What does it look like to be a Christian? What does it look like to be a follower of God in Christ? And we can see that it's not always the fastest change, But it is in 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 8. And it talks about how the Lord is not slow to understand as we understand it, but is impatient, hoping all things come to repentance. You know, He wants us all to be saved. He wants every one of us to go to heaven. And we, you know, sometimes we're like, God, what are you doing? What's taking so long? Let's, you know, we already got our Echo Hills bandwagon. Let's go. Come pick us up. But one of the stories that I've, I always think back when I'm always impatient and always think about, you know, what's going on, God. I was told that there was this little girl that was playing in the floor with her toys and whatnot. And her mom was sitting in a chair and she was sewing, you know, like most mothers probably did. And the daughter obviously had a simple question. She looked back and she looked over at her mom and saw the sewing pattern. And she was like, what is that? There's no picture. It's just strings hanging out the back. It looks like you have just, you know, thrown whatever kind of mess together as far as string color. You know, I don't get it. And she goes, well, come over here and see it where I'm at. So she gets up and she goes over to her mom and looks from her side and realizes that not only was it beautiful, but it was everything that most people want. It's the you know, picket fence with a dog in the yard with a tire swing and bricks going up to the house that's two stories with columns and has a garage and a basement. It's beautiful. And, you know, it's got the red door, you know, everything. And she's like, I just don't, you know, understand. How is that different? She goes, well, you just need to see it from my point of view because that's how I'm going to show everybody one day. And, you know, if we look at the perspective of us looking up at God and we're seeing this mess, just like the little girl was on the backside of the sewing pattern, we're like, God, what are you doing? Are you really paying attention? And He's like, one day I'm going to show y'all what I've been doing all this time and what beauty and artwork that I've been putting through and patience and time. And it's going to be amazing. I mean, if God said that, or Jesus said that, if I'm going to go prepare for you a place, I'll come back and get you. Well, obviously, in a different way of thinking, if He's not come to guide us yet, and He said He should go prepare a place, obviously He's still preparing it. Now, I don't know how many houses y'all have seen that have been built for about 2,000 years, but I'm sure they're pretty amazing. I'm sure the square footage on this house is beyond belief. You know, so it's just a different way of thinking a little bit there. But that's me. Different ways of thinking is a bunch of, like, the Matthew chapter 5. A bunch in Matthew 5 is about change and different ways of thinking. It's a lot of, you know, you've heard it said, but I say. And just for an example, he said, you know, you've heard it said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say, love your enemies and pray for those who harm you. You know, it was a totally different way of thinking. It wasn't something that they were used to. You know, turn the other cheek. You know, the whole idea that you allow somebody to hit you again, you know, and then to pray for them, that's just crazy talk. But yet, it's not when you understand it. When you can see from God's perspective, even a glimpse, it makes more sense. Because you're wanting to show that love to people because they can change. And that's what He wants. That's why He's taking so long to come back and get us, because He wants everyone to change for the better, so they can come and see from God's point of view how it should look and how it was way back when the world was good. So, you know, how do we get to that point? Well, in Luke chapter 9, verse 23 through 26, it says, deny thyself and pick up thy cross. You know, we have to lose our life to save our life. And that's really kind of a weird thought, you know, that we have to die to ourselves to gain life. But really, it makes total sense in a Christian standpoint because we screwed it up. Obviously, we need to get rid of ours and get somebody else's. This new life, this life that Christ promises that we as long as we strive and go, that He will help us through. You know, He never said that the journey is going to be an easy one, but He did promise a safe landing. You know, we already know the outcome. We already know that we're going to go to heaven if we do what we can and stay Christ. I mean, that's the landing. Now, persecution and different things like that is not always the fun part. It's not always easy to have to turn and pray for your enemies. But you know what? It does make a difference. Another one that my grandparents have told me that I always laughed at when I was smaller, but I mean, it makes a lot more sense now. But, you know, whenever I was mad at somebody, and I was like, I just don't like them. You know, they're always been a jerk to me. They've done these different things. I don't even want to talk to them. But my grandparents would be like, well, you know, that, you know, kind word and being nice to them is like a, you know, pouring water on a head of coals. You know, it steams them up. They get to the point where they can't do anything because you are so nice to them that they, I mean, who wants to be mean to somebody who's nice? I mean, if somebody always kept doing nice things for you, no matter what you did, eventually you're going to get burnt out, and you're going to be like, okay, well, obviously it's not as bad as I thought. It took me a couple of years to get to that point that I could admit that my grandparents were right, because I really did not like this guy. Bullied from 3rd to 6th grade is not very fun, you know? So it was definitely a different ways, but at the end, the same guy, I asked him to my 6th grade birthday party. It was a skating party. And I still remember it was a nice day. It was pretty out. I mean, obviously, I just turned a new age, so I got a lot of gifts. It was nice. But I remember going out with him, which the party wasn't over yet, but he had to leave early, so I was going with him. And he told me, he goes, Jared, I'm sorry. I said, what for? Obviously, I knew, but I just wanted to hear it. So he goes, well, he goes, I've bullied you for a long time. And he goes, honestly, you've been nothing but kind to me. And he said, I'm sorry I put you through that for so many years. He goes, you know, you really have made a difference in my life. He goes, I can tell that, you know, you do care whether or not, you know, I'm saved. And I talked to him a little bit about how that's not right and Jesus wouldn't like it. You know, that's little grave kind of talk for being a Christian. And anyway, he ended up becoming a really nice guy at the end. I think he's changed a lot. I haven't talked to him in a long time, but the last time I talked to him, he was doing pretty well for himself. And he always claims it for me being so nice to him, and that because he came from a rough childhood, you know, parents that didn't really love him, a dad that wasn't really that around. So, I mean, it was rough on them. And I'm glad that I was told by my grandparents to be kind. Because, you know what, I was probably one of the first ones to do that for them. And it made a difference for them. So I'm glad that I was able to do that. You know, see, sometimes we can see perspective after a while. God already knows it. He already knows how that looks. And we should listen a little bit more and strive a little bit harder just to make sure that we are persistent. Because we already know what's going to happen. So, also, in Acts 3:19 through 20, it talks about repenting and turning to God and to being in Christ. And we, you know, if anybody out there ever thinks about, you know, I really do want to change in life. I really do think that there might be something better than how I'm living. Then, I mean, you can come and we'll talk to you. And if you're ready, we can baptize you. And, you know, some people get stuck there, and then after they get baptized, it's like, that's it. But no, this is a loving congregation. This congregation will continue to talk and encourage you, because I know they have for me. I mean, I probably wouldn't be up here, and except for Dave, he kept telling me, Jared, you're going to do it. And I said, no, I'm not. And he goes, yes, you are. I said, okay. So, you know. So in closing, you know, change is always going on. I mean, we're breathing. We get the eye movement. Change is really a part of our life. We just don't always like change. You're moving, you know, from here to the cars, and sometimes you're moving from house to house or state to state. Change is always going on. It's a part of it. But we need to make sure that we have the right change, the change of heart that's towards God. We also need to remember that the resources, they're available. Everywhere you look, there could be a resource. I mean, who would have thought that, you know, you would really want those little shoes, you know, that you can find at, like, Walgreens that you put on your feet, and you spray down this little cleaner, and you can scoot your feet along with it, and it cleans it instead of having to get down on your hands and knees and scrub. I mean, that's who would have thought of that? Somebody did. You know, there's just random. Of course, you know, we talked about the useless things a couple of weeks ago about how things are just, you know, they came out with the random things that people will never ever use. You know, obviously there was a resource that they needed, and that's why it happened. You know, I already talked about how we need to have a willing heart to change. We need that heart. You know, we talked about it here at the table about, you know, Matt was able to tell us that we need that change of heart. We need that willingness to say, you know, not, oh, just here's some money, but we need to be cheerful. We need to be able to realize what it's going for. It's going to help somebody down the road. I mean, just look at the guys this morning. You know, if Dave never went and thought about making a program called Reach, and or if he gave up and thought, oh, well, it's not going to happen. It's two bosses, really? We can't afford that. That's never going to happen. Where would they be? You know, so it's a beautiful picture that God is able to use us in that way and be a part of His will. We also need to make sure that the placement of our values and priorities are straight, because we don't want to be like the rich young ruler and have something else in our way. We want to make sure that we're able to be straight and direct with God. I always think about you know, following Jesus in a car. You know, if through rush hour, you're always like right here on the next bumper, you know, in front. You just want to be so close because you want to get as close and fast to work as you can. And yet we don't always live our Christian lives that way. Sometimes we kind of drift off and we see the taillights in the distance, and then all of a sudden he turns. Okay, oh yeah. And you speed up and you can turn, you know, just to stick with him. But we're never right on Jesus. We need to be closer to Jesus. Also, we don't need to be afraid to ask questions to change. Sometimes that's the worst part. People give up. People don't strive for that change. They will just rather just, you know, they've done two things that they thought is how you're supposed to proceed to change, and it falls. It fails through. And yet, there's so many other options. So many people can, you know, can help you get to change. You know, something, you know, I would never have thought of was being kind to an enemy. You know, and then my grandparents came along and told me about it, and they said, but we can't take credit for that because that's Jesus. I was like, okay, well, I still think it was pretty cool. So, we also need to strive in faith and believe in God, because we need to continue to follow His example. So, very last verse, because I know I've had tons of them in here, is Mark 12:30. It says, love God with all your heart, your soul, your mind, and strength. I don't know about y'all, but that seems like pretty much everything that I have. So, if we're really truly going to do this change, and follow God, then it's with everything. And if God says we have everything that is at our fingertips that He's going to help us out with, then let's go for it. So, once again, if anybody is ready to come up, and we'll help you out in the best ways we can. So, I guess we're going to sing now.
552.
All right. Thank y'all. I appreciate y'all listening. So y'all come, and as we stand, sing this next song.